On this episode of Skeptico, Alex discusses Countdown to Coherence with the book's author, Hazel Courtney.
If you find a doctor and you find him to be a quack, not credible, you don't say, yeah, but he was right about these three other things. You say, he could have easily picked that up from some credible person. That is the only means we have of sifting through this tremendous amount of information that we're flooded with, both spiritual information, technical information, scientific information. We have to be the filter. And in particular, we're asking you, Hazel, to be our filter. And I just don't see where you've really, where you're really accepting that challenge. You're saying, no, just let it all in and whatever sticks, sticks.
No, I'm not. What I'm saying is, Alex, I went through something extremely profound. And when you have been in that heightened state and been able to affect what I used to call my tricks, obviously it's changed my life and my outlook forever.
Stay with us for Skeptico.
Welcome to Skeptico, where we explore controversial science with leading researchers, thinkers, and their critics. I'm your host, Alex Sakaris. Today, we return to a topic that I seem to be bumping into over and over again, and that is, how do we stay grounded in logic, in reason, in science, if you will, and at the same time, open ourselves up to this greater spiritual reality that does seem to exist? Because we keep bumping into that all the time, too. So the challenge, as I see it, is, how do we look at some of this stuff, like Hazel Courtney's book today, and how do we develop a filter to know what to let in and what to say, wait a minute, that doesn't quite fit? This is a challenging interview. I'm very glad that Miss Courtney agreed to do it. Her books are really, really quite good. I do hope that you read them, and I hope that you try and find your own truth in her material. Here's my interview with Hazel Courtney. Today we welcome journalist and author Hazel Courtney to Skeptico. Since 1998, Hazel has been on a spiritual journey, visiting and reporting on scientists, researchers, gurus, and spiritual teachers of all sorts. She's chronicled her adventures in her books, including her latest, Countdown to Coherence. Hazel, welcome and thank you for joining me today on Skeptico.
And thank you for having me on Skeptico, Alex.
Well, you know, let's talk about that because I really have to commend you for doing this interview. I've been very direct about some of the problems I have with some of the material in your book, and you insisted still on coming on and doing this interview, so it ought to be interesting, and thanks for being here.
Well, not at all. I just think, Alex, you know, that the main thing is for people to keep an open mind, and I always tell people to find their own truth. Everyone on the planet is entitled to their own opinions. So, I mean, I was just a busy journalist with the Sunday Times in London. It's the UK's finest broadsheet. I was an alternative health writer. So after I went through my experience, which was mind-boggling, you know, I started looking for scientists, cutting-edge scientists, who could help me. And when, say, one scientist tells you that the miracles, as it were, that I used to perform are normal, you think they're perhaps off the wall. But when you hear it again and again and again from various highly qualified scientists, highly accredited, I should say, then you start to think there's something happening here. And the body of evidence for the people who want to take note of it on the science of miracles is growing at such a rate that people like Professor Gary Schwartz, Professor Frederick Travis, William Tiller, and many others that I featured in the book are now quite willing to stick their heads way over the parapet.
Right. With you 100%. However, once we step over or reach over that parapet, jump over the chasm and accept that maybe things in this world aren't exactly the way that they seem in our normal consciousness, do we have to let our guard down? I mean, as a journalist, do you go through the same kind of vetting process in order to determine who's for real when we step into this spiritual realm, into this miracle realm that you're talking about?
Well, I think, you know, I try not to judge people till I hear the whole story. And my story was fairly profound. And so I note that one of the comments that you'd made earlier on was about Gary Renard, who I went to Stockholm to interview. I actually met the guy. And Gary, I mean, first of all, I went through the experience, which I hope we can talk about at some point. And then I wrote the story of that, which was the first book. And then I went on to meet lots of scientists and I gleaned a lot of evidence for the sixth sense. And I was kind of, I knew that the spirit world or whatever you want to call it was ready for me to start this third book. But I was looking for some kind of hook to hang it on. And somebody told me to read Gary Renard's book. It's called The Disappearance of the Universe. And Gary was basically stating that he has been in contact with some otherworldly enlightened beings for the last 18 years. And he says that, or they have told him that, the entire universe as we know it is little more than a hologram. That we are basically, we need to forgive each other a lot more. And at some point, this universe will actually disappear. So when I started to read all this stuff, I thought, crikey, you know, this is really amazing. But please remember, I'd had this experience and I have watched enlightened people pixelate in front of me so that I could no longer see them. And so it sets you on this journey of how is it possible for us to materialize, dematerialize, from this reality? Is the world really a hologram? And so I would say I try and keep an open mind. And I certainly didn't knock Gary Renard because I disagreed with a lot of what he said, but I also agreed with a lot of what he was saying. And so I set out to find out for myself whether all this stuff is real or not.
Right. But Hazel, you've just thrown out so many topics there, it'd be hard to pull them all apart. But are we really in a position where we have to decide whether we agree with Gary Renard or disagree with Gary Renard? I mean, don't we have to be in both worlds? So you've just alluded to, and I'll try and get to some of those other points, but just the fantastic, unbelievable personal spiritual experiences that you've had. And they are remarkable. And I think they're important to talk about because you're here to testify and put your personal credibility behind their reality. But when we look at somebody like Gary Renard, or we look at somebody like Sai Baba, who's featured in one of your previous books, we also have to use the normal vetting, rational, critical thinking skills that we have in this world. And it's that challenge of straddling both worlds that I think is most interesting, but is also most needed. Now, in the case of Gary Renard, nice guy, great guy, read his book. I found the book to be very profound and spiritually resonating with a lot of things that I believe. But at the same time, I had Gary on the show. I had one of his critics on the show. It seems clear, as you could easily find out if you did the work, that he has plagiarized a large portion of the work that he claims to be channeled material. It's clearly plagiarized. It's not even very creatively plagiarized. And yet he claims that this is channeled material from the Gospel of Thomas. Well, we have several translations of the Gospel of Thomas, and we can trace all his material to one very specific translation. He's clearly plagiarizing this material. So what do we do with that?
You learn to discern. You know, I think that you have to learn to trust your own gut. And so I didn't read Gary's book with a view to, was any of it plagiarized?
And why not? Why didn't you?
Well, no, hang on. You're missing the Well, I think you're missing a little bit of the point here. The point is, I took it that he had had an experience, and I wasn't picking apart every single word. I was trying to, it just, some of the subjects that he dealt with, like, are we a hologram? Are our futures set?
Hold on, Hazel. Let me step right there. Are you credible? Are you believable?
Am I believable?
Yes, you would say yes, you are, and then you would give me all these things that would back up that you have this reputation, you've written, your credibility's never been called into question. If you were found to be plagiarizing large portions of your book, lying, perpetrating fraud, would you still be as credible as you are now? Would we still read you the same way? Would we still accept what you're saying in the same way? Yet you seem to be applying a different set of criteria for Gary Renard because he's talking about spiritual matters.
We're having a big discussion here about Gary Renard. The overview of his book was, to me, it raised many fascinating questions. I didn't judge the man. I just wanted to find out for myself whether some of the subjects that he were raising, they fascinated me after what I'd been through. So we seem to be here judging Gary Renard. I don't know the guy that well. I spent an hour with him interviewing him. I just took out from that interview what felt okay and correct to me. I didn't go into the book in any huge depth because I have my own journey to go on. And so I say to people, whether they believe my story or not, that's their choice. You listen to your heart, you do your own research, and you make up your own mind. That's what free will's all about. So Gary was just the initial starting point of this story, and then I moved away from Gary's work and what he's talking about because that's his thing. It's not necessarily my thing. But it's just that some of the things he brought up I found fascinating and I thought, wow, this is great. So I'm just going to go off and look into this. But I'm afraid I don't even recall reading about the Gospel of St. Thomas. So I'm sorry if I'm, I didn't read about that at all.
But it seems like we're now not talking about the point. The point is credibility. The point is, how do we establish, not your credibility, let's leave that aside for a minute. We're now bombarded, when we cross into this other realm, as your book leads us, into understanding or at least being willing to explore the impossible, the incredible, which I think is a journey that a lot of us are interested in making. We have to bring with it all our powers of discernment, as you said.
Absolutely. And
you haven't discerned whether Gary Renard is legitimate, is credible. And I think that's central to your story. And you're brushing over it as if, well, it doesn't really matter if he's a fake. It doesn't matter if Sai Baba's a fake.
Just a minute. I went to see Sai Baba with a totally open mind. I have interviewed and met many so-called enlightened men and women, but I sat in a room with Sai Baba. Now, remember, at one point, I was manifesting ash. I didn't know how I was doing that. And so I then set about finding scientists who do know how such phenomena are possible. And so I didn't judge Sai Baba. I'm not into the game of judgment. What I did was, I mean, have you been to Sai Baba? Have you met Mother Mira? Have you met several enlightened masters? Because when you're in the presence of pure unconditional love, you understand it, you feel it in your heart, you feel it in your whole body. And wherever you get great goodness, you also get great darkness coming up to meet it. And so I didn't judge Sai Baba, is he a fake or is he this or is he that? I just went and enjoyed the experience. And then I made up my own mind.
You made up your own mind regarding what though? I mean, this is such a challenging topic. And it is the central topic. How do we evaluate these experiences? How do we judge these? Hold on, because there's really a central issue here. One of the conclusions we come to from reading your books and from understanding the science is that this reality that we have is not exactly as firmly planted in reality as we think about it, as we know. We live in more of a consensus reality. So we have our own reality, and then we have the reality that we share with other people. But in that shared reality, things like fakery, fraud, they do happen, and we do have to be on the watch for them. So to just
of course they do, but
Sai Baba has proven to be a fake. I mean, he's a conjurer. His stage magician tricks aren't even that good. So let's say he does have some spiritual skills. I don't know if he does or not, but I can't go there because I can't.
Yeah, but have you been there? Have you met the man?
I have not.
Well, then how can you judge, Alex? I mean, the thing is,
he's clearly a fake. He might be a spiritual adept and a fake, but he's certainly a fake. So
hang on. You're making really black and white statements here. You've never even met the man. Can I just briefly tell you a bit about my story? Because I think we need to bring this into context, and then you'll understand the space that I'm coming from.
Please go ahead. I love your books. I love the story about the spiritual emergency. I think it's a critical, critical topic, and that's why I was so excited initially to interview you, because it pains me to think that there are people out there who experience these spiritual emergencies, or these awakenings, and don't know what to do with it, and wind up being medicated or wind up in some institution, and it's a horrible thought. So please share that part of your story.
Okay, well, look, I was, as we've already mentioned, I was a journalist with the Sunday Times. I had a weekly alternative health column, and I lived in London part of the week and in a place called Birmingham, which is in the middle of England at weekends. And I walked into Harrods. It's a very famous store in London. On April the 8th, 1998, which was just before Easter. And as I went into the turnstile in the bread hall, for a few seconds, it would not go forward and it wouldn't go back. And in those few seconds, I mean, remember, I went in there to buy Easter eggs for the family and a loaf of bread. So, like, you know, I wasn't exactly in an ashram here. So in those few seconds, I had what's known as a spontaneous Kundalini awakening. And I had these massive tremors pulsing up my body. I thought my heart was going to burst. I thought my head was going to burst. And within 3 or 4 seconds, the turnstile moved forward. And I could hear a voice shouting in my head that I knew had not come from me, Hazel. Obviously, I rang the doctor. My driver got me to my doctor within 15 minutes. I honestly believed, Alex, that I had minutes to live. And if you have ever met anyone who's had a real close shave with death, it really focuses your mind. And so whilst I was busy giving the doctor messages to my daughter and my husband, he put the heart monitors on me and played my heartbeat down the phone to a cardiologist. But as he was doing that, I realized that I could feel what the doctor was thinking in my head. And so I then related back to my doctor what he was thinking. And I also told him that my heart rate was fine, which he concurred once he'd spoken to the cardiologist. So now I'm not quite sure who's more shocked, whether it's me or my doctor. And then he said, look, you've had a big shock. You really need to go home. And he sent me home, and I realized that my eyes had changed color and I looked a lot younger considering the enormous shock I'd had. And my husband, the doctor called my husband came home, and I started blurting out things to my husband like, look into my eyes and you'll know who I am. And I had this incredible energy pulsing through my eyes. And I didn't know in that moment, Alex, who the ultimate I was. I don't know how I got through that first night. In the end, I rang a spiritual friend who's a naturopath. He said, you're having some kind of spiritual awakening. He said, you better eat sugar to ground yourself, which I did. And then the next day, I found that I wasn't being, it's really hard to explain, but I wasn't able to eat any physical food. I started to get a fever, a tremendous fever alternating with intense shivering. I got this voice talking at me in my head that I knew wasn't coming from me. I started to be pretty telepathic, actually. I could feel what people were thinking. I could sense negative energies. And in the end, there was this incredible snowstorm taking place. It was, by this time, it's getting towards Easter Friday, Saturday. and a doctor friend from London, because something, my intuition told me that I couldn't call a normal orthodox medical doctor because he might have me committed. And I underwent an unbelievable near-death experience on the Saturday of Easter, which of course is the traditional time of death and rebirth. And I was on the ceiling of our bedroom looking down on this, oh God, this thing below me. I mean, I'd lost a lot of weight. I had this terrible fever. I'd taken to my bed. And I basically moved from this world to another world, triggered by shock, because one minute I was just going about my work as a journalist. And the next, it was as if, Alex, I'd been plugged into this ultimate supercomputer of this field of intelligence. So anything I needed to know in the moment I needed to know it, I knew. I could see other realities. I could see people as beings of energy. I could see their potential futures. I was looking into their souls. So it was as if no one could lie to me, and I could not have told a lie. It would have been a physical impossibility. And it was a huge experience. And it took about 6 months for me to ground it and like kind of sort my life out, because I was affecting and being affected by electrical equipment. I mean, it was a massive experience. And as it started to calm down, let's say, I then decided to go on this journey to seek out cutting edge scientists who could explain to me what the hell was going on. And so when you start talking to people like Stanislav Grof about spiritual emergency, which is when a spiritual awakening becomes a physical crisis, you begin to understand that many, many people are going through this. So then I wanted to know what causes it. And of course, Stan enlightened me. And then I went on to find people like Professor Frederick Travis at the Center for Cognition and Consciousness in Iowa, who has published 30 or 40 papers, and they have validated in science the difference between a truly enlightened man or woman and the rest of us. And it's known as total brain coherence. This is when the left side of the brain, the right side of the brain, and in fact, the whole brain are working in a synchronized fashion. I went on to take part in the afterlife experiments with Professor Gary Schwartz at the University of Arizona. I went on to meet people like, I think he's brilliant, physicist William Tiller, who's now 80, who's been researching consciousness and matter at Stanford for 40 years. And he helped me to understand how we are all capable of accessing other realities and coupling with the other realities, and how we can all potentially affect what I started to call miracles. And the journey has gone on and on and on for 12 years. So 3 books later, I could say to you that I'm really not that worried about Gary Renard's per se, in the sense that he's got his own journey. People can judge him, not judge him. People can judge me or not judge me. I've just told the truth as I see it to my story. And when I've spent years interviewing these scientists and transforming their technical language, their brilliance, into a language that I, Hazel, could understand. So I am passing their knowledge to other people. I interviewed theologians, shamans, for instance, Alberto Velodo. He was at San Francisco State University, and he went to live with the shamans in the Amazon for nearly 20 years. He's held his enlightenment. And so these people know what they're talking about, Alex. And when you hear similar stories from people like Nick Bostrom at Oxford here in England, Professor Bernard Carr here in England, from Paul Davis in Arizona, about the possibility that we really may be a holographic projection, you start to take notice of this stuff. I now know how healing works. I understand the science of enlightenment. I understand how our thoughts create. and this and this and many subjects I've covered in the books. That's what I've done. Shall I stop now?
That's okay. I want you to have a chance to tell your story because it's an amazing story. And you do talk to a lot of very qualified researchers, some of the same folks that we've talked to on this show. And where I was really going with all that is, hey, great. But when you come back from that spiritual experience, from when you come back from that Kundalini state, and when you start the third book, Countdown to Coherence, as you do, and saying that you were in somewhat of a slump again, which I think is so real, you know, because I think so many times we think that people who go through a transformative spiritual experience are therefore forever transformed. And for whatever reason, it seems like that doesn't always happen. I mean, we are in this world, and we come back to this world, and we are continuing to need to go forward. But through all that, I still come back to the point I was making earlier, Hazel. We do need that discernment. And I just can't quite wrap my arms around your position that, hey, if it resonates, if it feels good, I mean, that is the beauty of science. That's why you've gone to these researchers, these people who've looked at it in the most critical way, because it's the only way we're really going to be able to tell what's real and what isn't. And to throw it just out there, it's like, hey, just go try it out. I mean,
for instance, all the scientists in the world have their detractors. You have what people would term really good doctors, and you have not so good doctors. You have quacks and fakes and people who don't have integrity in every walk of life.
Right. And we avoid those who are quacks and fakes. We don't go to them and say, well, gee, maybe they have some good ideas. We have to use the standards that you, as a journalist, use every day. People who are not credible don't make it into the newspaper. Hopefully, they do all the time, but let's pretend.
Well, they do all the time, Alex, I can assure you.
Of course, but it's not the goal. The goal of the journalist is to be that filter and to find the folks who are credible, who do stand above the rest in terms of testing out their ideas.
Yeah, but we go back to judgment. With Gary, all he gave me, what happened was, after I finished the second book, The Evidence for the Sixth Sense, I then went back to my life of my main thing about writing health, and I wrote like an encyclopedia of health. But during my meditations, I got the feeling that I was meant to be doing a third book to like be the final book in the trilogy. And so I kind of just said to Spirit, you know, if this is really meant to be, I really can't be writing a spiritual book about irritable bowel or acne or eczema or cancer. I said, you know, I need something meaty and worthwhile to tell people on their spiritual journeys about. So although I didn't agree with everything that Gary said to me, and that I make very clear throughout the book, where I think he's got certain things right and inspiring, but he's also, I think, like, for instance, he says our futures are already set. Well, it would seem from the scientists, all of the scientists I've spoken to say we are creating our reality as we go along. And so through our thoughts and actions, through sustained, focused intentions and actions, we can change what's coming. And so what Gary's interview did, it kind of inspired me, and in the sense that he introduced subjects that I hadn't really thought about before. And so that was like a kickoff starting point. So I wasn't filtering out what he said about St. Thomas or anyone else particularly. And you seem to be quite angry about that, but nevertheless,
I'm not angry about that. We're not talking about the real issue here. I let you talk about your story. It's an important story. I hope people do find your material and do find your incredible accounts, because they're well chronicled. It's extremely well written and entertaining. But here is the issue, and let's just see if we can wrestle it to the ground. I don't care if Gary had a lot of great things to say that resonated with your former beliefs. He is not credible by the standards that you normally apply as a journalist. If you find someone, as you were just saying, if you find a doctor and you find him to be a quack, not credible, you don't say, yeah, but he was right about these three other things. You say he could have easily picked that up from some credible person. That is the only means we have of sifting through this tremendous amount of information that we're flooded with, both spiritual information, technical information, scientific information. We have to be the filter. And in particular, we're asking you, Hazel, to be our filter. And I just don't see where you've really, where you're really accepting that challenge. You're saying, no, just let it all in and whatever sticks,
sticks. No, I'm not. What I'm saying is, Alex, I went through something extremely profound. And when you have been in that heightened state and been able to affect what I used to call my tricks, obviously it's changed my life and my outlook forever. And whether you, for instance, let's say, God forbid now that you had some terrible illness. Obviously cancer is still treated as a terrible illness, even though lots of people get well from it. But let's just use that as an example. And your doctor sends you to the local hospital where the specialist there gives you his opinion as to the best course of action. And he tells you the facts of your illness and the facts that he knows to be true that can help you. But then say you meet someone else who says, no, that's not the right route to go. I think you should do this. And in the end, you could go to seven doctors and get seven opinions. And so I have been to many scientists. They're not all related. They're not all the best of friends, but they're all saying pretty much the same things in a different language. So what I'm saying is my intuition has become quite strong, and I teach people throughout my books how to awaken their own innate sixth sense so that when they come across something that is real and universally truthful, they will learn to discern. Learning to be discerning is very important. But what I'm saying is, say if you did have cancer and you went to seven specialists who are all believing 100% that the advice they're giving you is real, I can't spend my life interviewing every single scientist on the planet. I just went with the ones I had in the 3 years I had to do this book. And they resonated with me very strongly.
Okay, I'm just saying it isn't very hard to Google Gary Renard and find out about the plagiarism. It isn't very hard to Google Sai Baba and find about the serious charges, not only of
sexual
abuse.
Yeah, but are they true? Are they true?
Oh my gosh, now you're asking the question I'm asking. You said that doesn't matter. You just said that doesn't matter if it's true. You said it's about the experience. Go there and you'll know whether it's true or not. But how would we know it's true? Great, I'm glad you asked that. Is it true? Maybe I'm making all this stuff up about Gary. How do we know if it's true or not? By going and sitting with him and feeling his energy, or by doing the hard work that we normally do of investigating his work and comparing it to others? How do we know if it's true?
By just doing the work, by learning to discern in your own heart.
Oh, come on. You backed off. When you said a minute ago, is it true? You meant, is it true in the way that you normally talk about it as a journalist? It, which means if you went and interviewed other people, if you went and talked to all the folks, gathered all the evidence, if you sorted it all out, it was true. That's what you meant. You didn't mean just, hey, is it true? Does it feel like right in your heart? You meant that other kind of truth.
When I'm in, or when I have been in the presence of truly enlightened beings, they emit, we all emit our own signature range of frequencies. You emit your own signature range of frequencies. I emit mine. Everything that you swallow emits its own signature range of frequencies. And when I was in Sai Baba's presence, I only had to look in his eyes to know that I was looking at someone who is very, very awake indeed. I know what I saw. I know the miracles that I saw. And I'm not judging whether any of these charges are true. But what I do know is when Jesus was alive, let's use him as an example, there we had a fairly or a truly enlightened person, but we crucified him. And so I'm not saying that Sai Baba is some kind of saint, but what I am saying is I believe him to be a coherent individual who has abilities that most of us don't have, but that we do have access to if we're willing to do the work on ourselves by meditating, by tuning into the space between our thoughts and coupling with the vacuum level of reality. So I feel, in that context,
do those other charges matter at all, given what you've just said? Do they matter at all, the child molestation charges, the fakery charges? Do those matter? Could they matter? Hypothetically, if they were proven true, would they matter? Would they change anything about what you just said?
If they were true, then that would apply to Sai Baba as an individual. But what would not apply is the fact that when someone is fully, fully, fully enlightened, then they could only become or only be a person of true integrity and of pure love, and they would not be capable of doing the things that have been written about Sai Baba. But my argument isn't whether they are true or not. Of course it would matter if they were true.
Yeah, then I don't understand what you just said. So they would matter in what way?
Of course they would matter, because they're not consistent with a fully enlightened being.
So what would that do with your former evaluation of him from the spirit-to-spirit connection you had? So let's say, hypothetically, they're true. What would that mean to the spiritual connection you had? How would you sort that out?
Oh, crikey. I went to visit him just to see how I felt.
But that's not my question. I'm saying, hypothetically, if it was true, how would that change your understanding of his spiritual awareness, his spiritual enlightenment?
Well, then I suppose if it were true, I would question whether he was truly enlightened or not.
And does the same apply to Gary Renard?
I never even considered Gary Renard to be fully enlightened.
But you said that he had some spiritual truth that resonated with you. And
actually... No, I said that he was passing on information that I felt was interesting. And I think that he has passed on some very interesting, yes, universal truths. Absolutely, I do. But I wasn't judging the man. I was judging the information.
Okay. And if the man wasn't credible, doesn't it change how you evaluate the information? Of course, the information source matters in the information. And I think the larger question is really, how do we evaluate our own personal experiences, and how do we put them in a context that fits in this world? And are we just open to wherever those experiences take us, or do we come back and try and stay grounded in this world where things have to make sense and some people have ulterior and maybe not so good motives?
But I think I go back to my statement that in every walk of life, you have to discern what people's motives are for doing what they do, whether it be spiritual or otherwise. I always say to spiritual people, you know, if you want to be with people that are like you and want to grow spiritually, obviously you join spiritual groups, and some of them resonate with you and others don't. And if you don't like the way people are acting or behaving, then you move away till you find a group that you know you resonate with. But that goes through all walks of life. I mean, I find it very frustrating that you're asking me to give definitive ways of discerning. We're in the middle of a process here. We're in the middle of a huge leap forward in consciousness. And so there will always be people who say all the stuff that we're talking about is absolute nonsense. And there will be those who might be a bit more open-minded. But at the end of the day, everybody has the choice to make up their own mind. I'm not asking anyone to hand their power to anyone else, because the power lies within yourself.
Okay, very good. The book again is Countdown to Coherence, A Spiritual Journey Toward a Scientific Theory of Everything. Hazel, you're a brave, brave, brave person to both write the book, and I certainly appreciate you coming on the show. Thanks for joining me.
Thank you for having me. All right, God bless. Bye.
Thanks again to Hazel Courtney for joining me today on Skeptico. If you'd like more information about this show or any of our previous shows,
please visit the Skeptico website. It's at skeptiko.com. You'll also find a spot where you can post a comment there, a link to our forum where you can engage in a longer conversation with us, us being those of us in this Skeptico community. And you'll also find an email and a Facebook link to me. Many more shows coming up, some really good ones, I think. Stay with me for all of that. Until next time, bye for now.